Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And we're going to turn this over to WEA Traffic, check on the roads here in Baltimore. We have an incredible panel here with us this hour.
Very impressive.
With us, Dr. Raymond Winbush once again. We're going to have Fry Chidea, who will join us by phone, by ISDN from California, Kelly Goff from The Root, Janks Morton, to talk about Django, to talk about Lincoln, talk about African-American images in film, and these movies in particular, which I went and saw over the weekend and then watched Sankofa on top of it just to get a different perspective. We'll be right back with all that. Don't go away. I'm Mark Steiner.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
As we jump into this conversation, I want to remind you all to join us this Wednesday. Anthony McCarthy and I will be in Annapolis for the 10th annual Annapolis Summit.
10 years.
We'll be interviewing the governor, the president of the Senate, Speaker of the House at the Governor Calvert House at 7 a.m. is the breakfast. 8 o'clock is the first interview. 9 o'clock the governor comes in. You can ask your questions of them about where you think the state's going, or what you think they should address. And you can call 410-454-0500 for tickets to join us. That's 410-454-0500 for tickets to join us. Or write to hfishman@bizjournals.com. Get your ticket. Join us there. There's still seats available, and you should be in the audience and get out there and ask your questions. It'll be a great morning. It'll be broadcast here that night on WEAA, broadcast on the Marfa Public Radio, and be on cable channels across the state. So come. All right. We went to the movies. We saw Django.
I saw it over the weekend, yeah.
I did too.
Saw Lincoln last week.
Saw Lincoln over the weekend. I got Holly Garima's old film, Sankofa. Watched that as well over the weekend to see it again.
That's incredible.
This all started obviously because of the On the Route and other places. The massive conversation took place. And on Ray Winbush's Facebook page as well, where this massive conversation took place around Django. My producer, Bobby, saw it, and he did not see it, but he said he thought it was probably much ado about nothing, but he's going to go see the movie. but I think that, and I understand what he means by that and some of that, but I think that they were all interesting movies. Now, we were going to have a broader discussion with people who've written about the Lincoln film. We're going to do that later in the month. We are going to talk about that film here as well because of the whole level of the black world that was left out of that movie and why, and talk about what that means. But we're going to kind of wrestle with the issues that came up with these movies. And we are joined here in studio. Anthony McCarthy and I are. Janks Morton is with us once again. He's a filmmaker. His most recent documentary is Hoodwinked, the sequel to What Black Men Think. And he's founder and CEO of Iago Entertainment, a multimedia company. And it's good to have you back in this.
It's so good to be with you, Mark. And before we get into it, goodbye. This is my last interview in Baltimore. I'm moving to Atlanta.
Well, so we can get you on by phone, though.
Yeah, we can. But thank you for over the years, everything. Just thank you for everything. You've been a jewel and a great relationship. I'm going to miss people like you in this city.
Well, I appreciate that. I'll miss you, too. But see you in Atlanta. And it's good. I'm going to see what comes up next.
ISDN.
Dr. Raymond Winbush is with us. He is director of the Institute for Urban Research here at Morgan State University and a leading thinker and activist. And after I read his Facebook stuff, I knew he had to be part of this conversation as well. Ray, good to have you back in the studio.
Good to see you, Mark.
Farah Chidea is with us, and she's a journalist, an author. Of course, you've heard on public radio for many years, one of the great broadcasters in public media. She's now the distinguished writer in residence at New York University's Arthur L. Carter Journalism Institute, and hosts a series of town hall meetings in New York and San Francisco with New York Public Radio and Yerba Buena Center for the Arts, and does join us by ISDN from KPCC out in L.A. And welcome. Good to have you with us, Farai.
Mark, always a delight.
See, I love it. It sounds like you're right here. I wish you were, but it sounds like you're right in the studio. I love it. Yeah. And Kelly Goff is with us. She is political correspondent for The Root, regular contributor to The Huffington Post, author of the books Party Crashing, How the Hip-Hop Generation Declared Political Independence, and The GQ Candidate. And Kelly, welcome. Good to have you with us.
It's great
to be here. I'm just sad that we're not all in one spot because Soraya's a friend and I'm a huge fan of her. So I talk to her more on the radio than we get to see each other for brunch.
We can rectify that. We need to bring in some more of our New York crew. But yes. I agree.
410-319-8888 is the number here. You can join us. So people are calling in already. So let's go. First of all, just initial reactions, perspective. The film Django. I thought it was. Should I just start throw something out and see if George just go around? I mean, I expected as much. Quentin Tarantino makes great. I'm sorry.
I'm happy to start. This is Kelly speaking.
Okay, Kelly. Go ahead, Kelly.
Because you know, you have there are only so many words we can actually write when we do pieces. I know we all wish we could go on and on. There's a lot actually that got left out of my piece, but I'm going to say that as I made very clear in my piece, that I actually am a Tarantino fan, so I wasn't coming at this out of a vacuum or someone who was coming with a hidden agenda to already dislike the film. I'm actually a fan of his other work, and I have to say that I was disappointed from that regard because I simply don't think it's as good as his other films. So let's get that off the table. Wow. And because of that, I actually am now realizing, having had even more time to reflect since I wrote my column, I actually think there's a lot you can get away with when something is really high quality, right? Like when Kramer from Seinfeld, whose name I don't even remember his real life name, said the N-word and went off on his audience, part of why that got so much coverage is because there was no joke.
Right, that's
like,
right.
There literally was no joke. It was like he got mad at a group of hecklers and started shouting the N-word repeatedly. There was no joke. So I think that's a bit of probably why I had to be tougher on him in this film, is that the questions I already had only became more pronounced because I thought it was a sloppy piece of work. And I was disappointed on top of that. And so the questions that I had that other African Americans already had get more pronounced because it was not it was not high-quality art. And so, you know, that opens itself up to even greater scrutiny and critical thinking like I have about the fact that the violence directed towards blacks was much more fetishistic than you have seen. For instance, in Inglourious Basterds, we didn't see that type of violence directed at Jewish victims. And frankly, I don't think that if the film had portrayed grotesque violence against Jewish victims, the film would have been produced by the Weinstein brothers. So that's a lot I laid on the table, but that's kind of my perspective on it.
Well, let me turn to the somebody I can see is responding immediately.
Let's go to Ray for it, Ray.
Go ahead, Jenks.
Well, it's
Jenks Morton.
I'll qualify. I'm a Tarantino fan. I'm a fan of Westerns. I'm a fan of spaghetti Westerns. And I went into that film with my best black militant hat on. I mean, I went in there on a minute because I have people that follow me on Facebook that I use as a barometer. If they like something, I usually hate it. So there's some dear friends of mine loved that movie, and I went in there to find a reason to pick it apart. And I'm sorry, but about halfway through the film, it hit me. I'm like, man, I've never seen like a black superhero in a Western film. Okay, so we got Posse and we got Buck and the Preacher, and that's about it. But that doesn't count anymore. I'm going back to my youth of those Westerns that I read. I'm a little bit older, and then as a filmmaker, I would kind of diverge from your caller. Art is in the eye of the beholder. There was some cinematic things, and I think he's even up for an Oscar. I heard it got leaked that he's going to get costume design
No, his costume designer, not him.
Yeah.
That has not been leaked.
Well, just how that all goes into the cinematic structure. It was so different for me in the experience that I actually came out of the theater, called my other best black militant activist friend, and said to him, please tell me why I was supposed to hate that film. Because it was just a lot of things in there that I understand where the arguments are falling in, but a lot of things that I have not seen as, like for us. And nobody's ever going to encapsulate slavery any kind of way. It's just not going to happen. But for us, in that kind of, almost dogmatic style that Tarantino takes in his films, to put, Jamie Foxx in this superhero kind of Western role was unique for me, and I enjoyed the film pretty thoroughly.
Farai?
Well, I entered the movie not as a huge Tarantino fan. In fact, I haven't been overwhelmed by pretty much anything he's done.
Wow.
I do have a real soft spot for From Dusk Till Dawn because I'm a big monster movie fan, and I just thought it was so over the top. And I forget the name of the actor who has, like the major acne scars, the Latino actor.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
he's
yes,
in everything.
Yes.
He's also in Heat.
He's in Machete,
Danny,
too.
Danny right.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Danny.
Yeah,
he's Yeah, anything that he's in makes me a little happy,
Oh, wow.
They'd found a role for him in, Antebellum plantation life, I would have been. But I have to say, I went in and it's like my low expectations overall made me surprisingly happy with the film experience. I attended with another friend of mine who's African-American and who's from the Deep South. At one point in the movie, they mention a part of Mississippi that was known as a particularly brutal slave-holding territory. And he's from not far from there. He's like, you don't understand. People were being lynched up until practically yesterday, you know, in this area. And he was basically like, well, if I was going to go full on, I would do it in a totally different way. He saw it as, you know, I mean, I'm from Baltimore, you know, Baltimore is Mason-Dixon, but it's not, you know, it certainly did not have the Deep South, you know, kind of architecture around slavery, although there were many enslaved people in Baltimore and Maryland. But his reaction was sort of like, you know, oh, as a man from that area, this didn't ring true for me. However, he went with his father, who, if anything, saw more of that attitude, you know, and his father loved it. His father was, he's like, I think my dad was just happy to see all these white people getting killed. Right. I'm just going to be real.
I think that's a general theme, but I don't want to talk over everyone. That was
something that when I saw it in the theater, I noticed in the audience who in the audience was racially mixed, who laughed at what parts and who didn't.
Wow.
So, Ray?
Well, very quickly, you know, it's interesting that all of us started off by saying I am either a Quentin Tarantino fan or I'm not a Quentin Tarantino fan. So I was asking, you know, in the studio to myself, I said, why are we starting off with talking about Tarantino? It's because you can't separate Tarantino from his film. One of the critiques of Django, of course, I'm not going to count them, but it's either 108 or 110 times that he mentions the word nigger in it. Jelani Cobb, one of my colleagues, said that it became a pronoun in the film. Other white directors have used that epithet. Coppola in that famous, you know, thing in The Godfather, and Scorsese in The Departed uses the word nigger. But Tarantino is obsessed with it. He gets orgiastic, you know, in all of his films about the use of the term nigger, and that's one of the criticisms that Spike has of him. Spike Lee has of him. I mean, I think the film was a spaghetti western revenge fantasy of enslavement. I mean, if I were to classify it in one phrase, but I think you can't separate this film from Tarantino himself. And then we have to ask ourselves, why can't an African American or an African, you know, make a film about enslavement? It has to be made by a white person telling our stories, and that's a danger in so-called revenge fantasies.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a great
But can
point,
we just point out that Reginald Hudlin, who's a longtime produced. Black Hollywood player, is co-producer of the movie.
Yeah, we can.
Right, but Spike never could have directed this film.
No, he
Spike
couldn't have.
The script, it would have been, I'm not sure if laughter is the right word, but...
No, he just doesn't have Tarantino's brand of humor at all. And Tarantino has an approach that it's so over the top, he can make it work.
Mark,
for some people.
Anthony?
Kelly, you done?
I'm never done. Any man.
Oh, wow.
What an honest response. So I went into the film, kind of like Faraya. I was not all that thrilled, or I just wasn't all that captured by Tarantino. Never have been. Enjoy the films because it's a unique style, and I love that real dry, not so dry sometimes, humor that you have to be smart to catch. Oftentimes the violence is over the top. Anybody can get that, but the humor in it. And I went into the film because I wanted, and I know this is more than people care about, I wanted to dislike it. I wanted to tell people why I disliked
right.
it. But I tell you, from start to finish, I loved that film. And I didn't know the word I was looking for until Jenks said it. But Jamie Foxx in that film, he became a superhero. I was pulling and cheering inside and vocally for the superhero. And I fell in love with that character by the end of that film. And when I left, my friends and I, we sat in the coffee shop next door to the theater and talked about the film for hours.
Yeah.
yeah. hours, scene by scene, word by word. I love the way white people responded and looked at me when they said nigger over and over and over again. Right. And one lady even tapped me on the arm and said, I'm sorry, I'm laughing so loud. I mean, and she apologized for the entire white race. Right, right. But before enjoying watching that word, just an orgy. Or how did you
orgiastic.
Write that down. That's a big one.
It was a powerful film. It was Mark, that style, that Tarantino style came through. Mm-hmm. I was mad at myself sometime for finding humor in such horror.
Depravity, yeah.
But why do we have humor in enslavement? I mean, that's the part of the film that I frankly dislike. When he did Inglourious Basterds a few years ago, there was virtually no humor associated with the Holocaust or the German occupation. I guess it was in France a little bit and stuff. And it seems almost, and this is something I just get tired of any film about enslavement, is that the racists are portrayed humorlessly. You know, so if you remember the scene in the film where the Klan can't get the hood right.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, that was 10 years prior to the actual establishment, I guess, of the Klan. And I didn't find that funny. I mean, everybody was laughing. And I said, why are we laughing at something, these racists? They were very serious. They were very deliberate. So that was the biggest issue I had with the film, is that the use of humor in talking about one of the greatest Holocausts, if you please, in history.
Farai?
Can I?
Go ahead, Kelly.
I don't want to get the men upset. I want to make sure.
Talk to us.
Don't worry about it. This is called the Mark Steiner Show. It's okay. Go ahead.
So I actually did laugh at that scene, mainly because I usually think racists are pretty stupid. And so by default, I have any opportunity I can see for someone to shine a spotlight on their stupidity. And I've interviewed a few white supremacists in my day, which is always led to some interesting stories, particularly the fact that they haven't yet figured out that I'm black, which, again, speaks to their IQ quotient when I've interviewed them over the phone by not Googling me or anything. But what I was going to say is I actually think that his criticism, though, speaks to exactly what is the problem that myself and others have with this film, as I think that there are those who have the wherewithal, and God bless them, to simply say, I'm going to just simply take this film for what it is. I'm going to appreciate what I see on the screen. I'm going to take Quentin Tarantino's humor as it is intended, not as it is potentially received by some people as offensive. And I am one of those people who says that we don't have that luxury, right? Because if we had that luxury, then we could simply say that Birth of a Nation is a cinematic masterpiece. That's all I care about. I don't want to care about the fact that it was used as a recruiting tool for this Klan. I want to talk about what the filmmaker intended to do, and he made a bang-up, amazing piece of art that has withstood the test of time. I can't do that. And so for me, in looking in the context of the film, there's the fact that not that he used it, which I think it belonged in the film for the time period, but the fact that he does seem obsessed with it. And more importantly, it is the fact that a humorous film about slavery, the same film would never be made about the Holocaust in Hollywood.
Exactly.
And so that is something where I applaud those of you who can say, look, I like Quentin Tarantino. I like it for what it is. He's a superhero. God bless you. I just don't sleep that easily. That's just not how I'm wired. And it doesn't mean it's right or wrong. I'm just saying that that's just how I think people are approaching this differently.
So, Farai, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, I definitely agree. I've always thought that there's different degrees of gravitas and humor applied to different human tragedies. Sometimes it can be, I won't say the opposite, but sometimes, for example, there's, you know, there's the narrative of white rescue, whether it's, you know, about the civil rights movement or about aid workers in Africa. There can be these super serious movies that have no sense of humor whatsoever that are about oppressed black people. I don't think that we have quite reached the point yet where we have as much kind of revolutionary humor in a mainstream context about the black narratives of black salvation. Like, when you want to talk about spaghetti Western, I would like to see a Harriet Tubman spaghetti Western.
Amen.
Like, you know, like full on Harriet, like, come on, move on through the forest because, you know, no one goes back. You know, that would be like my tagline, because no one is going back, you know, and that's how she rolled. She was just like, if you choose to come with me, you're coming all the way. There's no turning back. There's no, I mean, and that was black self-salvation. And so I do actually really, I think Jamie Foxx, if anything, has been underrated in this film. I mean, I think that his cast mates were great, but I thought he was great in this film.
I mean,
and I liked the fact that he was unsympathetic in many ways. You know, the whole idea is that the hero is an archetype that can use the elements of a villain for good. So heroes use violence, but for good. But there's a sequence, I won't give too much away, where he is forced to or chooses to stay in character. And as a result, a man dies. If he had broken character, the man would not die.
That was an intense scene. You know, I think
it was a very intense scene, and I thought he played it very well.
Well, a couple of things. Let me just throw some things out here. I do want to get to the phones. We have Gary, Varna, and Greg in that order. Or is that the right order? That is the right order. And when it comes to your calls, you do not hang up. Your voice is getting on the air. But a couple of things. And let me just push a little bit here. I mean, I think that when we talk about humor, humor is born out of oppression. I mean, America's humor is black and it's Jewish at its root, a lot of it. And that humor came out of slavery. Mm-hmm. And that humor came out of the camps. I mean, they did make movies about the Holocaust of humor. Life is Beautiful was a movie built around...
The Producers as a Broadway play. What's his face?
Mel Brooks.
But I don't think they're analogous because I think it would be a spoiler, but the scene that Farai is talking about and the other scene, I'll just use the word Mandingo because I don't want your audience to feel like I'm giving away the whole film, but those...
You can't... People will see it anyway. Yeah, make it difference. Go ahead.
Wait, what?
I see people,
go ahead.
No matter what
go
you
ahead.
Give away, people are still going to see the movie, but go ahead.
Okay. I don't want to get any angry spoiler alert.
No.
So spoiler alert. But those scenes in particular, that's not going to happen with the Holocaust. It's not. And the thing is, and I'm not saying I want it to. I want to be very clear. I'm not saying, please go make this movie. But that's what I'm saying is about how cavalierly our stories are treated.
Yes.
And that goes to the bigger conversation of who is actually behind the scenes, creating content, producing content, having the final say, having the power to shop. I know it's a bigger conversation than we have time for tonight, but that's, I think, what's not setting well with a lot of people.
For me, the most intriguing character in the film was Samuel Jackson's character as the HNIC of the plantation.
Yes.
And it's ironic that the protagonist at the end of the film became two black men, you know, Jamie Foxx, Samuel Jackson, which and Samuel Jackson actually created and betrayed, of course. But I think the Samuel Jackson character was, for me, the most fascinating
film. I
thought
it was a brilliant kind of in-your-face expose
of Uncle Tomism.
Yeah, Uncle Ray
super Ray slavism.
And
I thought it was a bit too cartoonish and too easy.
Yeah.
Because I think even the people who work collaborators, the same way that, you know, in any situation you had, you know, collaborators in the destruction of their people, even in the Holocaust. I think that collaborators are very complex people, and I think that the Samuel Jackson character was played for laughs. But when you really think about what a collaborator does by betraying his or her people, it's, you know, I understand why it was played for laughs, but I do think it could have been done in a deeper way.
But it's just like, it's Tarantino, though. We keep going back to everything he does is over the top. Everything, that character was over the top. The one scene when Django's being tortured, that was over the top. Even how they played Kerry Washington as this subservient kind of thing, it was over the top. But that, again, in the lens of how he tells his stories, that's just what Tarantino does. And I keep reeling it back. I mean, the one thing I would ask is, you know, maybe I missed the memo, but I just cannot recall a black superhero like that. I mean, I really just, someone where you, at
Shaft.
The end.
Shaft!
Wasn't Idris Elba just a superhero in a big film?
I'm sorry?
Wasn't Idris Elba just a superhero in a big film? Thor or something?
The British actor. The British actor.
Oh, no, Idris was in Prometheus.
Right.
He was in Prometheus.
But no, I'm talking about...
It was a dumb movie.
I said Shaft, somewhat in jest, but not completely.
Shaft was kind of like that, and I really qualified down to the point.
Idris and Luther in the TV series Luther is much more like... He is, you know, a bad MF in Luther, which is a series you can catch on Netflix. It's a British produced series where he's a very troubled detective who's a real
incredible
anti-hero
acting.
In some ways.
Right. We have to take a real short break. Okay. We're going to come right back to the conversation. On the way to the break, I have to remind you, so don't let me do this, and then we'll go right to break. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the University of Maryland Transplant Program. Nearly 2,000 Marylanders are waiting for an organ transplant. The University of Maryland conducts research and performs procedures designed to optimize transplant rates and provide least invasive surgeries for organ donors. More information about the University of Maryland's transplant program and becoming an organ donor is available online at umm.edu/transplant. More with Django in our conversation with our guests. When we come back, Gary Varner-Gregg, I promise your voices will be heard. Don't go away. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you. More information, www.mecu.com. And we are talking about Django. I think we're going to stay with this and not going to move to another film because this is where we are, and I like it, and why not?
And it's your show.
Jenks Morton's in the house. He, of course, is a filmmaker, made the documentary Hoodwinked, which you talked about when he was last on the show, sequel to his other film, What Black Men Think, founder and CEO of Iago Entertainment, a multimedia production company that's moving now with him to Atlanta. Dr. Raymond Winbush is with us, director of the Institute for Urban Research at Morgan State University. Farah Chidea is with us. She is a journalist, author. Everybody knows her from public radio, the great work she's done there. She's now a distinguished writer in residence at the New York University's Arthur L. Carter Journalism Institute and hosts a series of town hall meetings in New York and San Francisco with New York Public Radio and Yerba Buena Center for the Arts. And Kelly Goff is political correspondent for The Root, regular contributor to the Huffington Post, and wrote the books Party Crashing, How Hip-Hop Generation Declared Political Independence, and The GQ Candidate. And the number here is 410-319-8888. And my mother never liked liars, so I'm going to go right to the phone. 410-319-8888. And Gary, you're on the air.
Oh, man. It's a lot to cover here. And I'm not going to step on other people's time. But I have so much inside of me. I'm almost 60 years old. So my viewpoint as an African-American man growing up here in Baltimore is quite different than a lot of people's and yet the same as many. In my notes, I simply say this. At the end of that movie, I turned to my date and I officially forgave Quentin Tarantino for his past excesses in using the N-word. I want you to know this comes from somebody who is blacker than thou, okay? And I go back to Mandingo. And what I want to tell you guys there and everybody else, trust the actors that you love and trust them being true to their art. And my son, who's named Biko, after Stephen Biko, my son told me and everybody else on Facebook, he said, this movie was epic. Before him and his friends went to even see the movie, I told them, don't fall for the okey-doke and the use of the N-word. And when I read the alternate article comparing Spielberg's Lincoln with Django, the main female protagonists in both movies are, and this is one of the things that's beautiful about this whole paradigm here. And Spielberg's Lincoln, the main female character, sheds a tear because Lincoln comes up with the Emancipation Proclamation, who if Frederick Douglass wasn't there, he would have never done it. He'd have sent us all back to Africa, okay? but in Django, the main female character, portrayed by Kerry Washington. She's got an R branded on her cheek for being a runaway slave. She is whipped, and she's put in that hot box, that hot metal box, subterranean.
Right.
And I'll finish by simply saying to you again, you and everybody else, that I officially forgave Tarantino for his excesses in the use of the N-word. And I remind all of you that we're all African. We're all black. We're Afro-American, Afro-European, Afro-Asian, Afro-Caribbean, whatever. We're all African. And I'll just leave it at that, and I will take your comments off the air.
Thank you very much. Responses to our listener?
It's just it's that kind of movie. I mean, Tarantino's work has been, even Inglourious Basterds, when it was up for a lot of nominations and everything, Hollywood was fractured on it. And I, myself, as a filmmaker, this is what I learned from my first film. You can't make everybody happy.
That's true.
My first film was Cannes because it had too many black conservatives in it. I didn't even know. You know what I mean? I thought we was lift every voice, people. But I put some conservatives in there. Boy, they shut. But my point is, you can't make anybody happy. And how we express ourselves is through, one, the lens of our life, our experience, our tourship, and our ability to tell stories. And that's not appealing to everyone. There's people who hate war and peace. It just is what it is. But I think that we would put this under a microcosm, looking that it would service us or our desires to see our expression of our own lens in Tarantino's auteurship. I think it's a disservice to everyone, because I had problems with Do the Right Thing on the scene where they go with the ethnicities, where they go, you all of that. That drove me crazy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, so you can't make everybody happy. I think, though, that we're going to delimit this piece of work based upon looking for something that would ratify our own beliefs, and that's just human nature.
I'm just looking for a black director, not producer.
That's me.
Black director.
That's me.
That will get a green light from Hollywood.
Won't happen.
To do will a never film happen. On Ida B. Wells Barnett. That's all I'm looking for.
That will
for.
Never happen. And that's another point that why I take great objection. Because I don't like Hollywood. I mean, put that on the table. I do not like
do
them
it
guys.
In Baltimore. Do it in
somebody dropped the Weinstein brothers early. I don't like them. I don't like what they do to black imagery. I can't stand them, folks. But as these things come flying through, as they come through the pipeline, we have got to pick and choose our battle. And again, if you're gonna pick Spike's battle, you just know him and Tarantino hated each other for years. Yeah. Samuel L. Jackson won't do another Spike Lee movie because of what's going on.
This is much personal as anything
else. Yeah, that's how it is.
It's gotten very personal.
But I don't think anyone is picking. I mean, I haven't heard anyone on this show trying to pick this battle for Spike Lee. I think, like I said earlier, and everyone seems to be on the same page on, it is a much bigger conversation about who's getting to tell
exactly.
our story.
That's right. That's exactly
and
right.
This is part of the peril of a white man choosing to tell our story, one of our defining stories, in a comedic fashion, right? Mm-hmm. Is that there is going to be a question mark. That's not to say if a black director did this film, I wouldn't have questions, but they would be different kinds of questions, right? And that's, I think, all part of this much bigger conversation.
Can I jump in on one movie that hasn't even come out yet that I think is already controversial is the Nina Simone.
Everybody, all right, everybody, collective sigh. Let's do it.
Oh, man. Yeah, I've gotten into a huge, you know, Facebook thrashes where I had to own up to a little bit of my own colorism. Like, I was never raised with what I thought was colorism. You know, my mom is more light skin. My father's quite dark skin. And everyone in my family is like the whole, we go from the white chocolate chips to the dark chocolate chips, you know,
we got
it all going on. But I did feel like when I saw pictures of Zoe Saldana in what looked like blackface to me,
something happened.
Like,
yes.
I just got the vapors,
Guttural.
You know? And so then I had to separate my own, like, is color destiny? Should there have been a darker skin actress from the other questions, which are that they're just telling her story wrong, like they're making up a love relationship that didn't exist,
and
her daughter is incensed by
that,
and that they also want they want someone who has traditional Hollywood sex appeal, and you know, Nina Simone, she was a goddess, but she was not a traditional Hollywood type.
To diverge,
you know?
Just slightly with you, and however, it was nice to finally meet you, but this is Jackson.
Yeah, likewise.
Nina's story is anchored in truth. That there's a different, this again, this fictional character based upon some truths in Django, who's been represented in Westerns before, is just it's Tarantino's lens. It's how he decides to tell this story. So when we get to Nina, I mean, we have a face that we can. It would be like me trying to do Joe Frazier. But I don't look nothing like him.
Well, before I was saying, I think that the trouble with Nina, the Nina movie for me,
it was who greenlights.
No matter how good it is going to be, acting-wise,
how good or bad, it's who greenlights.
It's going to be what. This is the cinematic image for the mass of humanity
that's
going to be left for Nina Simone. And that's the crime.
Yeah,
That's the problem.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's like,
yeah, it's the Hollywood version. I mean, you know, I wish that Hollywood had a more of a range for black characters.
No, it's
you
not
know,
a,
in so
it's
many
a bastardized
ways.
Version of what Hollywood perceives black imagery as. And that's where, you know, that's where we all, I think, will agree on that they do a disservice to who we are, our culture, what we look like, what we think, what we process, because somebody's sitting back behind this big mahogany desk pushing buttons.
When we were at the movies, one of the things we saw was a coming attraction to a movie about the tsunami.
With Ewan McGregor,
and it's about white people who got hurt.
And Naomi.
That's right.
Yeah,
I mean, give me a break.
Yeah, I actually saw that this weekend.
Oh wow,
it's out.
That's crazy.
And as a sidebar, you know the backstory on that too, because people are already upset because I was actually a Spanish family.
Right,
exactly.
Right. And then played his
So Ben Affleck's movie, he played a Hispanic in that film as well.
So I'm going to go back to the phone series. I promise to get callers in. And we were going to talk about Lincoln. On the 31st, we're going to have a Lincoln show, invite some of these guests back and others as well, because that's another movie that has to be looked at in the incredible characters like Elizabeth Keckley, who was actually a leader that moved. And the people in that film, the black characters in that film, they actually existed and were actually leaders of the movement, actually may have affected the thinking of Lincoln and Mary Todd Lincoln.
That's right.
And Thaddeus Stevens as well, with Lydia Smith's character. Mm-hmm. And they were like...
They were just
like
whitewashed.
Yeah, poof.
Whitewash.
You know? I'm like a ghost. Poof. But that's a whole nother. We can fight for that for an hour.
410-319-8880. Another great movie. Well done. Incredible movie. Mm-hmm. Incredibly well acted and filmed. Spielberg doesn't make bad movies. He just leaves things out. Lots of things.
Yeah, like
Varney, you're on the air.
Hello, Mark Steiner. I want to comment, or address this question, rather, to your guest.
Hey, Varney, could you turn your radio down off? So, because we got feedback. Just turn your radio off.
I'm across the Okay.
Here you go.
I want to address your guest who said there was a shortage or absence of black heroes in slavery, and I guess he meant represented or known. Two people I want to call to mind. One is Nat Turner, who was definitely a hero.
Never
who
be a
fought against an oppressor, and he used just what they used on him, violence against violence. The other one was Vesey, who rolled right out to freedom under their noses because he was a trained and skilled seaman, okay? These are heroes that we never taught our heroes because they offend white people because they fought back.
Well, I think
mentioned Sankofa. I saw this maybe 10 years ago with my 8-year-old daughter.
Saw it again this weekend.
Sankofa, okay? Think about the HNIC in charge in Sankofa. And you're right. They never show no humor in the Holocaust because the Jews claim and still claim, always claim, the world must never forget. But one actually told me, isn't my situation, meaning slavery, over? So this is who runs Hollywood, whether we want to talk about this or not either. It's mostly Jewish people. Mm-hmm. So they don't want truth. They never did want us to know the truth because they're scared that we'll rebel against them.
Okay, I don't think I agree with that at all.
Yeah, it's a reach.
But I think that, and there are humorous Holocaust movies, but there's this.
Yeah,
there's lots of them.
Yeah,
but there's a lot of movies.
Definitely not comparable in terms of the violence here, and I want to be very clear because I've seen Life is Beautiful a million times, and it's not comparable. It's simply not.
That's not what I mean. But the humor was in there, and there are a lot of very violent Holocaust movies.
That combine humor? No, they're not.
No, that's not true.
Okay. So if you can name me a Holocaust film that's on par, that has a scene that's on par with the dog scene
I can do that. But I can't. I'd have to look them up. They're not on top of my head at the moment. But I definitely can do that.
But see, you got to
email me.
No, but I have to look up. I have to look up Life is Beautiful. I couldn't remember the name.
That's old age. That's not
Jenks. but Jenks, when you were talking about superheroes, you were talking about. Not in reality.
Not in reality. I'm talking about imagery. So I'm a big Reggie Hudlin fan. I'll put that on the table as well. So I'm just all messed up going into this, man. You got Tarantino, you got Hudlin. Hudlin does the Black Panther, which airs on BET. I just love a black superhero, you know, someone that you root for mm-hmm. at the end of the movie. And what I was in a mixed audience as well. And what surprised me, I saw the kind of degree of uncomfort of non-black people in the studio, but I did see them all cheer. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a racial cheer at the end. It was a cheer for really good versus evil. I just happen, from the lens of my experience, want to see a black superhero. And that's in a Western.
But we had so many of them on the plantation.
But I'm just talking about film. I mean, we know Nat Turner. I'm the guy that will tell you if Nat Turner had an AK-47, we would be living in Turnerville. I got it. But I'm talking about on film.
Yeah.
On film. Do how often do we see someone that not just we root for? And I kind of take pause that we rooted because he was killing up white people. That's why I was rooting. I think it was good versus evil. But me as the young black boy who grew up on Saturday afternoon watching all of those daggone Westerns, it's saying, wow, I can't even remember the last time I seen a brother doing this on this screen. I guess
it's an odd juxtaposition to talk about superheroes and slavery. You see what I'm saying?
Why?
Because
overcoming circumstance.
You read Runaway Slaves by John Hope Franklin. There were so many heroes on these plantations.
I got that.
Those who were poor.
I keep going back to the frame of the cinema. When we sit there or we watch the boob tube, what are you seeing that you can cheer for? And I'm talking about these imagery of black people. This is real. I'm saying, and this is me trying to take away something positive, even though I was impressed with the film. I'm going, man, and I called my boy. I said, look. That dude was a black superhero.
He had his blue suit on.
And think about how Kerry Washington looked at him at the end of the movie. That's my man.
Mm. Yeah.
That's super. That's Lois Lane.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So
let me go back to the phones here. I want to bring Kelly and Fry back and let them take over a little bit of this conversation. There's a movie called Bent. If you want to see a violent Holocaust movie, Bent.
Yeah.
Bent. Mm-hmm. Bent.
Googling that right now. Okay.
Bent.
Okay. Yeah, Bent also brought in gender and sexuality politics.
Right.
Yeah,
I remember that movie.
Yeah, very powerful movie.
And we got some good
movies. I'll name some others. Bear with me, because sometimes, you know, Cenk says I'm getting old.
No, I just said it's old age. I didn't say you're getting old.
Greg in Lauraville, you're on the air.
Conversation. And I went into the film skeptical. I went with my biracial son, who's a big Tarantino fan. And I teach at Morgan. I teach a class on diversity, and I'm a white guy. And Mark knows I've written a book on African Americans in television.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that no one's hit on, everything I've read about this, the great conversation here, to me, I think the key line in the film is after that mauling scene, which I had to cover my eyes for part of, that what's said to Christoph Waltz's character, who was shocked, and he said he's seen a lot, or he knows that, and what's said to him is that you don't know Americans.
That's right.
And that's the key to this film. It's starting to show what Americans have done and what our history is, because we've been denying it for 300 years.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Yeah, that's
great point. Farai,
I really appreciate you saying that. I mean, I think that one thing, you know, to circle back to the Holocaust and slavery. I remember once I had a seminal argument I will never repeat again, because it was one of my worst moments, where basically I was a young journalist and someone who worked with me, who was also a young journalist, we had these, which was worse, slavery or the Holocaust debate, which it's the stupidest argument ever, you know. And our friends were all appalled, because both of us kind of showed our rusty dusties on that one. And it's not a question of what's worse, it's a question of how have representations been constructed in American society? And there has been so much cover-up of the brutality of slavery. And I think one thing that we have to talk about is, in this movie, you know, this movie was not meant to, you know, kind of serve this specific narrative too much. But they do talk about the buying and selling of humans, et cetera. But the slave trade built American wealth. There would not be so many private corporations. Literally, enslaved men built the U.S. Capitol. You know, there were all these skilled laborers who were enslaved. I mean, America is built on a big pile of money that partially comes from hustling Native Americans off of their land and using enslaved people to build things at no cost. And we can't forget that that is, you know, we don't want to talk about slavery, I think, in part, not just because of the brutality, but also because we have to realize one thing I said to some black friends of mine is like, I'm a beneficiary of slavery, you know, because some people who, you know, shared my skin color were enslaved. They built up a base of wealth that allows me to live in one of the richest nations in the world. So all of us have, you know, hands that are kind of touched by slavery. And I think that one of the things that a truly revolutionary movie would do is talk about the money, like follow the money. And that I have not seen.
I mean, they're coming up with great ideas, man, but I'm just saying, when you understand the mechanism that is Hollywood and what they do, we know the stories, we know our history, we know things that we would like to see, but the ultimate green light on what gets crafted around our narrative is it's just spooky.
What you're doing, Jackson, what I think is different about today's era is that we're in a time when movies can be made and shown in different ways.
Correct.
That's true.
You know?
Correct.
We're entering a new era when it comes to film.
Yeah, we're there. And
I think that those things can be done.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I think Farai is absolutely correct. That I would take it a step further. There would be no Western capitalism in the 21st century without slaves, rum, and sugar. We wouldn't have any of the stuff that exists today in this world.
That's right.
Oh, I have a superhero.
Who?
Yet another superhero who a movie should be made out of. So a man named Tom Reese recently wrote a book. That's called The Black Count.
I was talking with someone else today who said the same thing.
That's it.
Yeah. So basically, The Black Count is about a man who became a French general. I know we have to go, but he's a hero.
Oh, here's the one thing. I lost my black card after I saw Django. I did not know that Alexandre Dumas was one for I missed that.
His father was Haitian.
I have stand in the port of Marseilles and looked at the Chateau d'If and said, wow, I did not know until
you have an extra copy of the book Dumas. You have to read it.
Yeah, I got to. It's
a great book. Tom Reese wrote a great book.
Yeah. Hat tipped it.
You can go online to steinershow.org and hear my interview.
And the other
with
one,
Tom
Before really Columbus. They came before Columbus.
He's amazing.
Ivan Van Sertima. Yeah.
So we're really down to the end here. Let's try to get one quick call in and then we're going to. We have to wrap it up. Billy in Columbia, you're on the air. Quick comment.
Okay, I just want to say two movies that I've seen. One was called Paris Trout, 1920s era, starring Dennis Hopper, who was this racist guy.
Yeah,
you remember that. Okay, great. The other one is The Gray with Harvey Keitel. He was Nazi Stoffer or something. HBO movie, very graphic. They had other Jews, exterminating Jews, and they showed all the naked bodies and all they took was their gold, their watches and their gold teeth and showed when they got incinerated and all that. It was very graphic. It was tears in my eyes watching that. Movie called The Great, starring Harvey Keitel.
All right. Thank you, Billy, for that. Thank you, Billy. Very closing quick thoughts. We have like 3 minutes left from all of our guests. Very quick thoughts. Let's go to Kelly, go ahead.
I'm really glad you didn't ask me about Lincoln because I haven't seen it yet.
Be ready January 31st.
My big thought, and I'm looking forward to seeing more young black filmmakers make and create content I can cheer for. That's about all I have.
I'll send her a copy.
I'm going to make a movie about Denmark Vesey.
Wow.
There you go.
Great.
Go ahead. That's all I
got
to say.
That's all you got to say.
That's all I got to
say.
That's it.
DeMarco Vest.
Why don't you let me play the evil white man?
Oh, wow. I don't think you could pull that off.
No, that's like
I don't think. I've yes, never seen you mad, but.
I'm an actor. I can pull it off.
But I will, like, again, kind of close it out with this is that we can't want everything from, especially from a dear friend of mine said that, you know, Hollywood will never give us anything that will make us happy. Yeah. It just won't happen. So with that, there is new media, there's new filmmakers. There's new ways of us trying to support to get our stories out in different ways.
Farai?
Well, you know, one artist that I'm fascinated by is Steve McQueen, Steve McQueen the actor, but Steve McQueen, who is an Afro-British director. And he is doing a film right now. He did, you want to speak about brutality on screen, he did a film called Hunger, which was about the Irish prison uprisings during the Troubles. Absolutely brutal to watch because it was about hunger strikers. And now he's doing a film that's going to be starring Chiwetel Ejiofor, who's one of my favorite actors, called 12 Years a Slave.
12 Years a Slave. I can't wait for that.
So it's going to have Michael Fassbender, Chiwetel Ejiofor, Brad Pitt, you know, co-written by John Ridley. Right. So that's something, you know, when you when I think about really edgy directors, Steve McQueen, the British director Steve McQueen, is edgy, and I'm curious to see what he does with that cast and that topic.
Like I said, you can't make everybody happy, because I wrote Chewie. I like Chewie. I wrote him off when I saw Kinky Boots.
I hate that movie. I saw that.
I love his act. He's a brilliant actor. Yeah. I hate that movie. So.
He's a brilliant filmmaker, I think.
So you can't make everybody happy. There.
So I'm looking forward to interviewing him. Yeah. That's when everybody gets old. So I want to thank all of you for being here. Jenks Morton, Ray Wimbush, Farah Chedea, Kelly Goff, and my dear friend Anthony McCarthy. Good to have
you
on.
See you on Wednesday.
Yeah, see you on Wednesday. Thank you all for being in the studio.
Thanks for having me.
And for being with us on the show.
Thanks, Mark.
From New York and L.A.
Have a great one. This was fun.
This was good. Good to have you all here. It was a great show. And I want to remind you all to please join me this Wednesday morning in Annapolis, interviewing the governor, Speaker of the House, the President of the Senate. You can be there, ask your questions, have your voice heard in Annapolis for our 10th annual Annapolis Summit, 410-454-0500, 410-454-0500. Get your tickets and join us there. Tomorrow we'll be looking at the rapes in India and here in the United States, in Ohio and in India. And we're going to be talking to the folks from Idle No More, the indigenous movement in Canada, who is shaking that country and shaking the world. All that and more tomorrow. So thank you all for listening and being part of the show today. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Bobby Marvin Holmes, Mark Gunnery, and Stephanie Mavronis. Our engineer is Andre Melton. Our new intern, welcome, is Matthew Hamburger. Good to have him in the studio with us. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cut. You can hear the show again and podcast and our past shows. Find out about our guests at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.